Welcome to the FemTech Health Podcast. Today, we're joined by Daniela Gillette, an artificial intelligence and machine learning enthusiast. We're going to dive into all things related to using data and technology to solve complex problems in healthcare and public health. You're going to learn about Daniela's journey from aspiring to be a doctor to becoming a health informatics expert, the potential of AI in maternal health, and the impact of AI in healthcare efficiency. All right. Let's get started with today's show.
I'm here today with Daniela Gillette, and she is an artificial intelligence and machine learning enthusiast. She uses data and technology to solve complex problems in healthcare and public health. Daniela, welcome to the show. It was so great meeting you at the Maternal Health Conference in San Francisco. And I just feel so passionate about having you on the show today because I just want people to understand that AI is all around us. It's happening every day, all day long. And that I don't want people to be afraid. I want them to understand both sides of it. So tell us a little bit about your journey into this space. And again, welcome to be with to the show today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited about speaking to you today more about artificial intelligence and to answer the question about this journey. What I will say is that my original aspirations was to practice medicine. And so coming from Haiti and being the child of immigrants, they only believe in three occupations, which is medicine, law, and engineering. And so I naturally kind of fell into medicine and actually desired to specialize in obstetrics and gynecology. But the universe had different plans for me. And so I pivoted to health informatics in 2015. Obtained a master's of science degree in health informatics from Nova Southeastern University, and then landed my first data role in 2018. And I've honestly been riding that wave ever since. And so for me, I am just passionate about maternal health because I'm actually part of the demographic that experiences racial disparities. And so at this point in my life, I'm just focused on using information to drive interventions to help put a dent or place a dent in this space.
That's so exciting. I love it that you're using your passion in this way. So explain to us a little bit of, you know, how did that whole shift happen for you? You know, knowing that culturally, maybe you were supposed to be an MD. So that cultural pattern, like, where was there a particular thing that happened that made you know, hey, this is the avenue that I really want to be in?
That's really interesting. I think what happens for a lot of immigrant children is that your parents say those three jobs or occupations so much that you ultimately grow an affinity towards one. And I naturally enjoy taking care of people. So medicine was the right fit for me at that time. And so that was my dream. But I ended up doing something else and I'm still happy and I feel satisfied about this work.
That's amazing. So this whole information, health informatics kind of work, like in the maternal component, because you are so passionate about it, like, was there a particular piece of that as you started that really made that make more sense for you then?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, I fell in love with programming and technology when I started to learn how to write SQL, which stands for structured query language. And it's a very common way to write code. And so when I discovered all of the opportunities that are available by programming and pulling data from existing tables, I then learned how to tell a story with that. So for me, it's being able to use data to then tell a story and then integrate that into my passion now, which is maternal health and healthcare.
I love it. And I know at the meeting that we were at, it was just amazing how many maternal deserts there was all over the country right now. And it's really, you know, looking at that and saying, hey, what are we going to do about that? And then when you look at all the different disparities that are all over our country as well, we have a lot of work to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, what I realize is that this change is something that will probably take centuries to, you know, actualize, if you will. Right now, I'm just focused on doing the work that's meaningful and will put a dent in the space because I may not be able to fulfill the ultimate promise in my generation, but the ones coming after me will. So change will definitely take time.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. So at the stage that you're at right now, what is the, you know, what is the emphasis or the work that you really feel like in maternal health that maybe AI can help with?
That's a really great question. So I would say that it could help a lot with detecting diseases and disorders earlier. It could be used to personalize treatments and really improve healthcare efficiency. I was reading an article a couple of days ago about AI being used to predict pregnancy complications, as well as breast cancer diagnosis and just other gynecological diseases. And so there's a lot of uses, you know, outside of women's healthcare. And I'm a huge advocate for AI because I always say that, you know, smart medicine can be good medicine.
Mm-hmm. And so when people kind of come to you and they feel fearful maybe about utilizing it in medicine, even though we already know there's so many good things that have happened, you know, whether it's helping with patient diagnosing, you know, patient prognosis, you know, even having AI assistance for MDs, like you see with the MD bot, like all of those things are already going on. So when people have hesitation, how do you answer that? Or how do you help them understand because of your deep background in this work?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I think that a lot of people feel that AI is only for techie people, smart people, and that's not true, right? I think that with, you know, generative AI, it's really making AI accessible. So simply by using natural language to write prompts and tools like ChatGPT and Bard, you receive a customized output. And so for me, AI is like a muscle. The more you exercise it, the stronger you become. And I think the question is, how is it that we can build trust within the organization? Because a lot of people fear that AI is going to take over their jobs. And I think education is key. Helping people understand this is what AI is going to do in this line of work, and no, it's not going to replace your job, will give people the confidence to believe that this solution actually works.
I know one of the things I had seen is like in the dermatology world, you know, where they had, I think it was like 129,000 pictures that they fed into the system. And then they, you know, to teach it about, okay, are these actually, you know, cancers? And it was so interesting because as they taught it, right, hey, here's all these pictures, here's all these things. And then it turned around and was able to predict just like the physicians would predict who are top level dermatology physicians, hey, with a pretty good accuracy that this would actually be the diagnosis after it looked at all those pictures. Talk to us a little bit about that, because I believe like we're teaching it, right? How to be able to know what is right, right?
I mean, yeah, well, you know, when we look at the general definition of artificial intelligence, it's the stimulation or emulation of intelligence and machines. And when we think about AI models, they are essentially designed by using logical and probabilistic reasoning, right? AI models are scalable and they also can adapt over time. And so what you're talking about is like machine learning, right? Which is where we are fitting a model around a data set and then telling it what to do. So yes, there's a lot of great uses of that within the healthcare space, especially in radiology, where they're using imaging technology to predict the likelihood of someone being diagnosed or experiencing a particular condition. So I think it's a matter of just, you know, understanding those various components and knowing that, you know, as you continue to learn more about AI and machine learning, you can see the great uses being applied in medicine today.
I know one of the things just in our space in the public health world is that, you know, we feed it data and then we like fine tune it to ask it actually more specific things. So, you know, might come up with a general information, but we're actually teaching it, you know, like our policies and procedures, or like, you know, you see a particular, you know, thing like bladder incontinence, or if you have a postpartum mom who has, you know, X, Y, and Z, we're actually training it. And I think maybe sometimes the public doesn't understand. So can you explain that a little bit in detail, like how that works?
Well, a lot of times when a data scientist is developing a new solution, what happens is that they start off initially with a training data set. And then from there, they are looking at different features within that data set. They'll have an output variable, an input variable, and then we'll train the machine learning model on what to do. So a perfect example is where I work today. I work for a healthcare analytics company called Cotivity. And we are currently working on designing a more enhanced model within our fraud, waste, and abuse area. So we have the goal of allowing different clients to identify providers that are aberrant. And so by using training data, we've been able to now prioritize providers who are more likely of misusing healthcare claims, services, different things of that nature. So the data scientist, who is usually the smartest person in the room, will always be the one to actually train to train the model, just using different types of techniques, essentially.
I see. So currently, like in the next step of what you're doing, and you're kind of growing in your field as we go. So you're actually going to do a PhD. Tell us about what you're going for next and what's the next step of that, and share with us like why you want to do that.
Yeah. You know, I like that question because nowadays it's getting easy, well, difficult for me to answer it because, you know, with achieving this, you know, particular mark in my educational career, or journey rather, there are more opportunities. So it's harder for me to actually say, okay, this is the job title that I want. I know what I want to do. So just to kind of backstep there. So I'm actually a fourth year DRPH student at Loma Linda University, pursuing again a DRPH in health education. And my dissertation is going to be looking at the effects of postpartum Medicaid eligibility and its association with preterm births and postpartum depressive symptoms. So essentially, did Medicaid expansion have a positive effect on those two health outcomes? And right now I'm in the phase of analyzing my data set, and then we'll ultimately write up my results to hopefully publish in the Maternal and Child Health Journal. And what I really love is using data and technology to solve complex problems that are at the intersection of healthcare and public health. And so for me, I love being able to use data to tell a story. I love being in the position of helping organizations. There is a very infamous quote that I always use, and it's by Peter Drucker, and it says that you can't measure what's not managed. So a lot of times what I've seen throughout my career is that there are organizations that have the great ideas and great plans, but we're not managing anything. So how can we measure it? And so I am very fortunate in that I have the opportunity to pursue a terminal degree. And I'm just excited about just being able to use now interventions, community needs assessments to really help communities and entities really plan out implementations that are helpful to underserved communities, as well as individuals in maternal health.
Oh, I love this. And especially with all the Medicaid expansion that's trying to happen all over the country to allow women on Medicaid to have actual coverage for a full year after they deliver. Right. And that's a huge, yeah. And in my realm, it's a huge need. And different states, of course, are addressing it in different ways. So to have this important component, I think is huge for us to, like you said, be able to like manage data to actually figure out like what are we doing well and what are we not doing well. I mean, we already know that in some states, literally, well, in my state in particular right now in Idaho, they did not actually take the whole year. So, you know, our Medicaid patients right now only get 2 months of postpartum care. Mm-hmm. And it's super frustrating. I am just sharing from my own perspective. And we know the data already that they need that care for the whole year, and they're not getting it. And if you look across the U.S., you know, and you look up that data right now, you can see a lot of states, you know, did not actually do the full Medicaid expansion to care for women postpartum. And yet, like I think we saw at the maternal health conference, there's so many babies and mothers who are on Medicaid in our country. There's so many people, you know, having babies on Medicaid, but then we're not serving them well. And you brought up an interesting fact, I think, with maternal, like, you know, just mental health. I think, you know, will you expound a little bit more on that component of what you just spoke of, too, with your project?
Well, you know, essentially, since I'm still in the process of, you know, analyzing my data set, I don't have like a, you know, a conclusive result set at this moment. But it kind of ties back to what you were talking about with, you know, continuity of care. You know, as long as women have continuous access to health care, they can actually get treatment for their mental health challenges, and they can, you know, see their physician beyond that 60-day window after giving birth to a child. To me, what I've noticed so far in the literature is that, yeah, continuity of healthcare really helps individuals get access to quality care, which is very important.
It kind of brings up this other thing that, you know, I saw just even being at the Digital Health Summit, which was right after the maternal summit, was, you know, the whole idea of asynchronous care, able to actually, you know, have somebody, you know, to sort of step in, give their information, and then have a data set that actually works through their information so that now a medical provider, you know, would actually be able to see that information and then weigh in on that information, even if there wasn't time for an actual appointment. So do you think that AI is going to help with this asynchronous care type of work, because that we would have data sets available, you know, for whether it's maternal care or any other type of care?
Yeah, I do believe so, because with asynchronous healthcare, we're looking at healthcare delivery across a period of time versus a moment in time. And what I've noticed is that there are more AI-powered telemedicine tools that are popping up and really helping to remotely diagnose patients, aid them in, you know, patient decision-making as to when and where to go for services, and then also triaging them, right? It's like, okay, I'm feeling this symptom. Is it horrible? Do I need to see someone right away, or can I wait another day? There is a company out there that's called Informatica, and they're using AI to improve preliminary symptoms analysis and digital triage. And what I'm realizing is that with AI and machine learning, there's always more to learn. But yes, I do believe that it can help with asynchronous healthcare.
Yes, when we were at the Digital Summit, it was interesting. One of the physicians that I met with, she actually runs a whole program because she knows there's so many medical providers that are actually leaving the field in kind of droves. And she said, we don't really have enough staffing. And so they were using, you know, they sort of knew in all of it, right? But they were using asynchronous medicine. It was just an interesting component to me because it did exactly what you were just talking about, is like it was screening, like, oh, you know, if they had a fever, or if they had this or they had that. And they were working with people who had a lot of more chronic disease processes that maybe that couldn't get into internal medicine physician, you know, quickly, or you know, somebody like that. And so it was really fascinating to talk to her because I felt like, wow, like that way, you know, a provider could like overview that information and then get back to that patient. So maybe they couldn't connect on their timeframes because, you know, you have working mothers and working, you know, families and all of that, or they couldn't get daycare, but they could actually connect back and then try to find a time later to be like, hey, this isn't an acute thing, you know, like you don't have to go, you know, to the emergency department, but like this is a thing that we can, you know, manage until you and I can actually have a telehealth visit, or no, we're going to find you someone in person. And I do believe that's the beauty of what you're talking about, right? That because if we have so many people who need care, and I know just even in the pelvic health world that I work in, you know, prenatal, postpartum, et cetera, we don't have enough access for women, you know, rural access and access into different regions, whether it's city versus rural, et cetera. We just don't have enough access because we don't have enough providers. And how could we use, you know, artificial intelligence to help us? And I think, you know, that's that whole puzzle piece of trying to figure out how to use it for good, right? For good medicine.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Danielle, so tell us a little bit, like in your journey, like what are some of the things that maybe, you know, were a myth to you? And now you're like, oh, that was really like something that I thought was one way, and now I move the other direction with it. Like maybe something you thought, and I know you shared a little bit already that you thought, okay, I'm going to be a doctor, and now I'm moving in this direction. But what's something else in your journey that maybe you thought you were going to go one direction and literally totally pivoted?
It's a good question. I think that the pivot from medicine to data was like the most significant in my life, because I kind of had this like myopic way of just, this is my goal. This is what I want to achieve, and I'm going to do that. I'm trying to really think about my doctorate journey. And to be honest with you, I don't think that there's any, you know, other event in my life off top that really stands out aside from that transition of wanting to practice medicine to now being the person that's using data and telling that story. You know, I really believe that everything that I'm doing now has been thought out and, you know, has been planned out. So I'm really in a good position in my life now.
That's exciting. Actually, I love it. I love it that you can pivot like that, because that takes so much resilience to pivot and to move in a different direction and kind of follow that. That's really, it's amazing. I love it. So.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell us a little bit, how do you handle adversity every day? Because, you know, all of these different things that can be challenging to us because you're working in such newer spaces and, you know, things that, you know, maybe you're trying to solve and they are passionate to you. How do you handle your adversity?
Maintain resiliency, take responsibility, focus on what I'm really good at, identify a new goal and do good work.
Yeah, I love it.
That's
awesome.
My answer.
That's great.
That's
I love it.
That's how I handle adversity.
In this last year, what would you say was one of the most important things that you learned with your work that you're doing?
It's a great question. You know, I've learned to always be curious, to ask great questions. And so this past year, I've learned to be even more curious. I've learned to ask better questions. I've learned to really be at the helm of change by using my strengths to do good in my current line of work and also in future research. And so, you know, what I'm just learning is that, you know, there's no depth to just learning technology because it's ever evolving and ever changing. And so I'm giving myself patience, all right, to kind of learn more about changes within AI and machine learning, but being curious and asking great questions, honestly, has really served me well so far.
That's awesome. So, you know, one of the things I think at the Maternal Health Summit is that we talked about, you know, maternal death rates and the disparity that exists, I think, in different regions, not only of our country, but in different population bases. How do you think that we could utilize AI work to help us? Do you know it? Help us take care of that or identify this faster, quicker, so that we actually do a better job with that. I mean, is that possible? Like, tell me your thoughts.
Yeah, that's a very heavy question. I think that we can leverage the predictive capabilities of artificial intelligence to, you know, place some kind of probability on a particular demographic, right? Because one of the issues with AI is something known as algorithm bias, right? Which is where, depending on the training data set, this model may say, hey, just because this person is a female and she's Black, she's going to experience this. And there's no causal relationship, if you will. So leveraging the AI predictive capabilities will definitely help, I think, with, you know, reducing or limiting, right? I think that whatever issues we're experiencing as it relates to racial disparities are systemic things that, you know, again, we may not be able to change in my generation, but probably centuries down the line. And I think that by monitoring and measuring the impact of AI solutions, we can then see whether or not that solution is truly making an impact. That's my answer.
Yeah, I think, you know, just even in our space, in the, you know, pelvic health clinic space, you know, just being at the Maternal Health Summit, it kind of helped us sort of walk through, okay, these were predictors, do you know what I mean, of maternal health issues, you know, at the 6th day to the 42nd day, I think it sort of shocked me, you know, that time frame. I was like, wow, like that, there's that much happening, you know, like in that wheelhouse. And so even us, just as, you know, pelvic health therapists seeing people prenatally and postpartum, we were trying then to say, okay, how inside our own organization should we be monitoring, measuring better? Like, what were some of the things, you know, to look at, you know, to walk through, you know, oh, if somebody, you know, did have gestational diabetes, okay, they're at maybe a higher risk, or they came in with, you know, maybe higher, you know, blood pressure just from the start, and we didn't, you know, maybe we weren't monitoring and measuring it. So we're also trying to figure out, like, because we're seeing people maybe sometimes more than the OBGYN is, you know, because we've seen them for 2 or 3 months or four months before, you know, they even have a baby. And then, of course, then we're sort of out of the picture a lot of times until 3 to 6 weeks. So we're like, man, there's a 6 week, I mean, you know, that 6 day time frame, and then, you know, all the way to 42 days. And think of it, if we're not seeing our women till 6 weeks postpartum, right? And then, you know, they only have 2 months with a physician in some of these states. You know, I just want to get your thoughts about all of this monitoring and measuring, because we all want to do a better job of that. So what's a way maybe AI can help us do that?
I think, you know, knowing what's happening with your data is the first step. And then finding the problem and then proposing potential solutions based off of analysis of the data. So it kind of goes back to, AI can be leveraged to predict. AI can be there to potentially diagnose and say, okay, we're looking at this particular set of characteristics for this patient. And based on their patterns and their healthcare service uses, we're predicting that they're more likely to go back into the hospital after maybe 6 months of giving birth. So I think it's what's important for organizations to understand is, well, what's the problem in your business today? What are the problems you're hoping to solve, right? And then using, again, that predictive component of AI, I think will be very helpful for organizations. Those are my thoughts, honestly.
No, I appreciate that, because, you know, internally, when you know, like, we look at our own company and we're like, okay, this is a problem, or this is something that, you know, and when it comes up suddenly, you know, like, our data will say, like, if somebody has low back pain and has pelvic pain, then they have more likely throughout the pregnancy, then they have more likelihood, do you know, of postpartum depression or postpartum anxiety. So my staff knowing then, oh, those two things on board, then we want those two things to be resolved before labor and delivery, because then, you know, pain patterns are less. And so the likelihood, you know, goes down. And that was just, you know, that was actually, you know, data that's out there in the world. So trying to utilize things of that nature inside our own organization helps us say, oh, these are problems to solve, right? And then we can share that, like, all the way across. Okay, these are problems, you know, and then we look at our own, you know, note taking ability to be able to be like, oh, could we look at our own notes, put them in AI, you know what I mean? To look to see, oh, is it possible, like, to predict, you know, these people have had these things going on for, you know, maybe somebody only had it 1 month and then we help them resolve it. But maybe it's somebody coming in who's had it for 6 months, or maybe they had back pain and pelvic pain even before they got pregnant.
Yeah. You know, and the honest truth is that the wonderful thing about AI is its ability to identify patterns once it's actually been trained. And then it takes it a step further by then becoming smarter in the, you know, pattern identification. So I like what you said there. And, you know, that's one of the other great uses of artificial intelligence, is just being able to identify patterns and then make smarter decisions moving forward.
So do you think, I had somebody reach out to us recently about saying, hey, you know, of course we take patients' names off of it, but, like, could we look at so many of your notes, you know, to overview for a particular, you know, whether it's for a diagnosis or assistance and writing notes and all of that. Do you, what do you think about that type of AI learning to actually help, you know, get a prediction of like, oh, well, this is what we always say when someone has bladder incontinence, or this is what we always say, you know, like progression. Oh, this is a plan of care. What do you think about that?
Well, from what I've heard, it sounds like you're talking more about the generative AI aspect, right? Which is, you know, honestly, where you input text or any type of other data type into this, you know, prompt, and then it spits out your answer. I think that from what I've read online, there are a few organizations that are using generative AI to then use machine learning models to predict and identify different patterns. But there's a lot of great use cases, honestly, and I think it's a matter of organizations just trying to see what's out there, what really fits well into their business model and the like their bottom line. You know, if the goal for the organization is to reduce the number of infants who do not receive well child visits, then put in the data into a Gen AI tool and then see what the output is, and then build a machine learning model to then predict the likelihood of a child not receiving that appropriate immunization at the right time.
So, Danielle, tell us a little bit, because, you know, I'm like a rookie in this space and you're the one who knows all the work. So I just want to have people understand, like you just talked about generative AI, like how do people learn about all the different types of AI? And like, because I think people get confused, you know, through all of it. So can you help people sort of have the vision of that a little bit? I know it's way over my head, so.
Well, I mean, here's what I'll say. Like, I know enough to be dangerous, but there are definitely smarter people out there who, you know, who breathe this AI machine learning stuff, you know, day in and day out. And so to answer the question, I mean, people have to be curious. You know, they have to want to learn more about the different types of AI and how machine learning works, in order for them to fully understand what it's capable of. And so earlier in my, you know, introduction, I defined general AI. I just defined generative AI, right? Which is where you are inputting a data type into a prompt and it spits out new content, new data. And then you also have artificial narrow intelligence, artificial general intelligence, artificial super intelligence, you know. And really the difference between the three is the first one, AI, is only capable of handling one task at a time. So think of like a self-driving car. And then you have artificial general intelligence, which has the ability to perform multiple tasks across different domains. So think of your like a machine playing games. And then you have artificial super intelligence, which is intelligence that exceeds the human intelligence. And so I think that if people are curious enough and they watch enough people, they'll begin to hear a pattern in how AI truly works. And even when we have, you know, different struggles with understanding how it can have any type of existential threat to humanity, I think that by understanding the basics, what it does and how it can help humanity would really help to fill that knowledge gap.
Do you think, Danielle, that it will be significantly used like in digital health? I'm just curious your idea about, you know, and I know you weren't at the Digital Health Summit, so I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I just am just wondering, do you think that more and more people will use that so that more and more people in the medical field can have access?
So let's define what you mean by digital health. Are we referring to like electronic medical records, electronic health records? What are we referring to?
More actually seeing, you know, allowing people to have access to providers is more of what I'm after. So like in the digital health space, I'm thinking more of like, you know, a lot of people can't come to a visit in person and they need access. So whether it's by cash or whether it's by, because there's just not enough healthcare providers right now to really go around for the need. So I was just, you know, curious if maybe in this whole digital health medicine space, if AI will help people, you know, actually be able to do that at a more, you know, because maybe they, you know, can upload all of their stuff and then it comes to something and it goes through a system and then it comes out on the other side. So it's quicker and faster for a medical provider to actually answer questions or help people.
Yeah. So I don't think that, you know, AI is going to resolve the provider shortage challenge that you just mentioned, but I definitely can see how it can be utilized as like a co-pilot assistant, meaning that members have the capability of downloading some kind of smart AI tool where if they kind of talk about the symptoms that they're experiencing, that the assistant can then say, okay, I'm connecting you to a provider that's available now. I can definitely see that, you know, being an effective use of artificial intelligence. And when I think about, you know, being able to close that telemedicine gap that you just talked about, it's definitely possible, but it, you know, this is something that will take time. But with smart technology, again, we can connect patients to physicians right away through that example that I just provided.
Yeah, no, I love it because then that makes it quicker. And maybe there's somebody in one state that can take care of somebody somewhere else. And faster, like hook that up and make that happen. I know it's pretty exciting. So in the whole women's health space, as you grow, is your goal to kind of grow more into the maternal component of it? Tell us a little bit about that.
You know, I really want to be able to tie data and research together and develop strategies that really make sense for the problem that I would like to address, right? And so that's really where I stand right now is, you know, being able to leverage my skill set and experiences, including research and, you know, tying data to evidence-based medicine and saying, okay, we have the research and we also have, you know, other organizations that are replicating the same process and they're getting proficient and effective results. Because for me, I just try to focus on being the solutionizer, but then also creating opportunities for organizations to see what's happening behind the curtain and implementing the solutions that will make an impact for those who are unfortunately impacted.
I love it. The solutionizer, that's really good. No, I think of it like just like you're saying that you're using data to kind of tell a story. So if you know there's a problem, then you can find the data. Do you know what I mean? And then figure
Absolutely.
Out, okay, how do I become a solutionizer, you know, to all of that? So Absolutely. In your program that you're in now, how much longer do you have? And when might you have some of your stuff all together in this next couple of years?
All right. Well, I'm actually planned to graduate this summer in June. So in a couple of months, I plan on submitting my manuscript for publication consideration. And if all goes as planned, my goal is to start speaking at different conferences this year, including APHA. So I'm really excited about what's to come. And I know that with my experience, now education, and just enthusiasm about maternal health, I plan on doing really great things in that industry.
Oh, I'm so excited. I can't even tell you. It's really amazing. And honestly, like my mind goes wild thinking about all the maternal things that there's problems with and that we need a solutionizer for, really. I mean, it's
right
just,
away. Yeah.
This is pretty exciting that you're moving in that direction with all of it. You're actually at my alma mater, Loma Linda University. So it was pretty exciting when I heard that you were there. How did you find out about them and how did you, you know, decide to work with them with this next step for your degree?
Was in the process of researching schools and I wanted a school or institution rather that incorporated some element of spirituality. So when I found Loma Linda University and I read more about their mission value statement, I was immediately connected to them. And so when I had my interview and received the formal acceptance into the program, I knew it was a good fit. So honestly, it was just based on their morals and principles. And I don't regret my decision. I'm very proud to be a current student and future alumna. And hopefully when it's all said and done, I can come back and contribute to the student population in the DRPH program.
I'm so excited. That's amazing. I want to share with you, that's kind of why I went to Loma Linda as well, as I really felt like their mission statement of taking care of the whole patient, you know, spiritually, yeah, emotionally, physically. And as you know, I work in the musculoskeletal world. So I was so impressed when I knew that, oh, the passion of my heart is to be like, oh, if a person has a problem, I'm going to look at their whole globally, right? And what they need, yeah, and not just at their physical health only. I want to make sure that they're whole. So I love that you said that. And it's actually a beautiful thing. And you're going to make great contributions, I know, to Loma Linda's and to their students, because I mean, the need is so great, and we need to keep advancing in all of this work in maternal health care. And I feel like we have so much work to do in our country regarding it. Well, I mean, all over the world, but in our country, because we need to do a way better job. So, well, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today, Danielle. And I just really appreciate you sharing, you know, just your work and your belief and all of it in AI. And I look forward to watching. And after June, when you graduate and you submit your paper, I'd love to have you back on the show again to talk all about it.
Absolutely.
Okay. I really do, because it would be super exciting as we move forward. And I know with all the maternal and digital health that we're going to keep growing, and we need you inside all of this to help all of us in the medical arena to keep us moving forward in the right ways.
Absolutely. I would be happy to come back and report my findings. Thank you so much for the kind words, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you being on the show again. Thank you for your time, and I'll look forward to hearing all about it after June. So,
all right. Got my word.